Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Last month, headlines shouted, Great Barrier Reef suffers worst coral decline on record. We've spoken before about the decline in trust in media.
Right.
And we've even done a whole show on Honest to God about the same subject.
Mm-hmm. We also had that really cool show about the volcano that erupted.
Yeah,
Hunga Tonga. That's right.
So this is a perfect example, I think, of the media and its potential to be misleading. So the reality about the Great Barrier Reef is totally different than what this headline says. So Australian scientists have been meticulously tracking the reef's coral cover since 1986. So for many years, they published this annual average coral cover figure, and the data was showing that the reef had mostly been stable until the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Then it began declining, and by 2012, it had shrunk to less than half its original cover.
Hmm.
But then the reef started growing, and it rebounded spectacularly.
Hmm.
Scientists stopped publishing their reef-wide average when it started growing, because they didn't want to further...
Well, it wasn't bad news. It wasn't selling copy, so...
Right.
Yep, I can see that.
And presumably, it didn't fit a climate change
narrative, right?
So, by 2021, coral cover was higher than it had been since the measurements began in '86.
Hmm.
Which, you know, like on the surface, just stepping back here, if somebody had asked me how do you think the health of the coral reef and the Great Barrier, or the coral and the Great Barrier Reef is, my answer would probably be, oh, it must be bad. Right? I mean, same, right?
If you're asking me about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, or, you know, just generally, people are always telling you environmentally that things are declining.
Sure.
Right. So, well, in 2021, it was at its all-time high. Now, the measurements go back to 86. So, it increased further in 2022 and 23. It grew more still in 24. Well, this year's data shows that there was a decline across 10 of its 11 sectors that they measure. They divided up into these 11 sectors, with two experiencing their largest one-year drop yet. So the BBC headline was, Great Barrier Reef suffers worst decline on record. CNN says, Australia's Great Barrier Reef devastated by worst coral bleaching on record. So as I just stated, it fluctuates.
Mm-hmm.
Even today with those headlines, it's still logging its fourth highest cover since the records began.
Right.
So how I'm going to relate this to Catholicism... or just morality generally is, okay, Ephesians 2:2 talks about Satan being the prince of the power of the air.
Right.
Some have interpreted this as ruler of the air as a reference to including radio, television, and internet communications.
Okay.
Suggesting that Satan influences, this is
well, that's why we pray, so that, you know, in our radio show, this is directed by God, not by any evil power.
Right. So if you're looking at things in that interpretation of ruler of the air, then Satan's one of his, jobs is to influence media and to corrupt society. So what do you think of this idea about the media sort of structurally being under the whispers of Satan?
I don't think that's accurate. I think that media is a tool, just like every other tool throughout history. You know, whether it's a sword or a rake or media or AI, for that matter, which we're now in the AI era, I think they're tools. And sometimes, as Jesus said in the gospel, the sons of darkness are more astute than the sons of light. All these tools can be used for good, too. I mean, we're on a Catholic radio show right now, and it's being used for good. You think of St. Maximilian Kolbe. You know, he was at the forefront of using media and magazines and radio at his time to evangelize. So they're tools that can be used for good or for evil. Now, unfortunately, I think a lot of the media has been utilized and leveraged in the last century for evil. And there are people that are within the media industry who don't share the values, who don't have a Christian worldview. So it's been used very effectively for evil, but I don't think we should label the medium itself as evil.
Well, I'm not saying that all media. What I'm saying is that do you think that there is a general disposition towards misinformation, and that it's obviously not Satan himself directly, but through the whispers of and his influence through the whispers that why we have this potentially structural misinformation in the media.
I think that the human tendency to leave information out is always there. Every single one of us has a bias. One of the fallacies that we find in the media today is this fallacy that we can somehow be neutral or not biased. That's actually a fallacy that's very prevalent in the United States, but many other countries don't have that. You go to England, for example, and each one of the newspapers knows its editorial line. Like, so here's the liberal newspaper, here's the conservative newspaper, here's the Tory newspaper, and they label themselves that, and they write things from that vantage point. We have this somehow we have this notion in the United States that we can be neutral or we can eliminate the bias. I think the deeper issue that we have to look at is that those who work within the field of the media haven't been fully evangelized. When you look at the statistics of those who work in the major networks, for example, how many of them go to church? How many of them believe in God? How many of them pray? It's totally misaligned with the general populace of the United States. And so it's natural for them, because they're not being exposed to God or a Christian worldview or not praying, that they're going to present the world from the world that they understand, which is not the world of the majority of Americans. The problem with that, though, is because of the power of the media, they start influencing and changing the worldview of the people who are listening.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. So for centuries, people of faith have claimed that power can move mountains, that prayer can have the power to move mountains. Just as long as that, skeptics have rolled their eyes and asked, where is the evidence? So after the horrible Annunciation Catholic school shooting in Minnesota, MSNBC host Jen Psaki, among others, including politicians like Representative Maxwell Frost in Florida, they slammed people who offered up prayers for those affected by the shootings to the point that they were literally disgusted by the gesture of people offering up their thoughts and prayers. So let's juxtapose this cynicism towards prayer and the desire for proof of its effectiveness with modern science. At the heart of, you know, I love to talk about quantum physics.
Of course.
At the heart of quantum physics lies this weird observation that subatomic particles behave differently depending on whether they are being observed. Mm-hmm. So in the classic double slit experiment, electrons fired at a barrier with two slits will form an interference pattern, a wave, basically, when it's not being observed. But the moment you look at it, the pattern collapses and they become particles, not a wave. Okay. So Niels Bohr, one of the fathers of quantum mechanics, suggested that reality doesn't exist in any definite state until we measure it. So furthermore, the idea of quantum entanglement demonstrates that particles can instantaneously be correlated across vast distances, like from one side of the universe to the other. This kind of matches up, in my mind, with the idea that intercessory prayer, provided that it's in accordance with God's will, can be effective in a temporal sense. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I totally concur. And it's fascinating how science is catching up with the spiritual reality. And I would say that it's not only in the dimension of space, but also of time. We know that that prayer, because God is outside of time. As human beings, it's hard for us to grasp this concept, but we live with a past, a present, and a future. And we're really only living the present moment, but we can recall the past and we can look forward to the future. But for God, there is no past and there's no future. Everything is present. Everything is right here, right now. And so when our prayers go up to God and he hears our prayers and he acts upon them, it can affect the past and the future because it's all present to God. So it's really mind-boggling when you start thinking of that. And that's why quantum mechanics is so cool, because science in a certain sense is catching up with what we know by faith.
Right.
But I think going to your point about these people who've reacted in a very cynical way to prayer in a tragedy of this nature, when these children have been shot and killed or hurt, it's just showing what's in their hearts. It's showing the emptiness, the vapidness of a non-Christian worldview, where everything is just reduced to the here and now.
Yeah, and a lot of the non-Christian worldview, though, relies on science. That's as their religion.
It's their version of science.
It's their version of science, but almost as though that's their religion.
Totally.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's interesting when they start to, you know, converge towards that same truth. Yeah.
Right. And that's happened all throughout history. You know, I got a kick during COVID of seeing in people's front yards these signs that say, "I believe in science." Yeah. As if people of faith didn't recognize science. I mean, the Catholic Church has been on the forefront of science all throughout its history. I mean, you got an observatory in the Vatican. You got some of the greatest discoveries in science. So that even the Big Bang theory came from a Catholic priest.
Right.
So there's so many advances of science thanks to the Catholic Church, and the Church is not afraid of the truth in whichever form it comes in. And so the Church is always supporting science.
All right, but particular to this quote science, I think it's interesting because they
junk science in many cases.
Yeah, well, this is not, you know, this some of these experiments where this quantum entanglement, which I kind of, you know, liken to intercessory prayer when you're right. thinking of somebody, and actually it can, you know,
can impact,
shine God's grace on right. them, right? If it's God's will. So yep. there have been various studies about the power of prayer. There's a famous 2006 Harvard, it was called the Harvard Benson Prayer Study. Mm-hmm. That found no correlation between cardiac patients and the desired outcome. Mm-hmm. But then there was a different one in 2001 published in the Journal of Reproductive Health that found women undergoing IVF had significantly higher pregnancy rates when prayed for, despite not knowing whether they were being prayed for and being halfway across the world from their intercessors. So in my mind, trying to measure this through a study is useless because you don't know what God's will.
Right. Yeah.
Right. That's the key.
It's kind of a silly approach.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So nonetheless, as we make more discoveries particularly at the quantum level, I do find some of the other miracles that have been discussed in the Bible and over the centuries by the various saints to be interesting. And they are lining up with quantum mechanics. So for example, mm-hmm. Jesus appearing to the disciples in the locked room following his death, and that lining up with the concept of quantum tunneling, which allows particles to pass through a physical barrier mm-hmm. that would classically be impossible to cross in classic physics.
Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with the quantum tunneling, but it sounds like a fascinating
concept.
Well,
you can go up, you can go through a wall.
Right.
Particles can literally go through a wall, the mm-hmm. same way Jesus went through the wall. Mm. Another one is bilocation. Mm-hmm. Right. St. Padre Pio, famous.
Many saints throughout the history of the church. Saints. I actually know a priest who now deceased who bilocated.
Yeah. And quantum mechanics allows for particles to be in two places at once.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these, you know, folks that are saying, show me the proof. We are sort of starting to show some of the proof. It may or may not be related to prayer.
Yeah. But at the same time, Chris, I think you can't forget what... Gosh, I forget the exact quote, but it was someone who was tied to Fatima. It's like, you know, if you don't want to believe, no amount of proofs will ever make you believe. Yeah. And that's why faith is it's a gift. You can bring someone to take away some of the obstacles to faith, but faith is ultimately a step of trust in God and of recognizing that it's not just an idea. God's not merely an idea, but he is someone who loves me. And that's why we have to pray for the gift of faith and pray that the God strengthen that within our own hearts.
Yeah, I think that's an important ending to this subject is that, you know, that faith is not something that we earn. I mean, it's a gift initiated by God,
right?
Initiated by God who,
right.
you know, then hopes that we'll be receptive.
But it also comes in part too through the community, through the experience and the witness of others. And that's where it's important to share our faith and not to hide the light of our faith under a bushel basket.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. So Charlie Kirk's alleged shooter, and I think we're probably going to have a couple different times where we're talking over the next couple weeks about this situation.
Yeah, it's a topic which is really affecting a lot of people. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
It's really hit a strong nerve.
And one of the things that we ask folks to do is to email us if they want us to try and speak about a particular angle. And so what we're looking for is a way to frame a question. And so this is one question that came to my mind in this news cycle about the capture of the alleged shooter, Tyler Robinson. He was ultimately identified
mm-hmm.
because his father turned him in.
Right.
So he initially urged his son to turn himself in and later contacted a youth pastor for assistance, who then reached out to law enforcement. Ultimately, it was confirmed the father played a significant role in bringing him to the police, to the police. So as a priest, you obviously don't have kids, but it doesn't mean you can't appreciate the gravity of a father having to decide whether to turn his own son in, particularly when it might mean the death penalty.
Right.
What would you do here? What do you think you would do here? So I want to set aside, okay, obviously it's different if you are being told or you know of your son or daughter's intentions to commit something and then like turning them in to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But ex post facto here, what would you do?
Gosh, that is a tough question. Obviously, as you clearly pointed out, I don't have any biological children. I have lots of spiritual children. But as a priest, I'm always looking for what is best for the person. And the whole point of our penal system is correction. It's to right the wrongs. It's to try to restore justice in as much as possible. And in this case, if you've got a child who has gone astray, and justice is not going to be restored by simply hiding the fact or shielding them from the consequences of their actions. I had a tough conversation yesterday with a dad who his daughter got into some trouble, you know, at school, had some substances in her car that she shouldn't have had, and she's gotten, you know, suspended from school. And he is not trying to shield his daughter from the consequences of that because he loves her so much that he realizes if she doesn't experience the consequences of her actions, she won't change. And he's tried to tell her before and different things, and it just hasn't gotten through. And I think as a father or as a mother, you get to a point where you realize, I love my child so much, but they need to experience the consequences of their actions.
I totally agree, but the nuance here is the death penalty.
Yeah.
I, as a father of five children, I can't, no matter what my kids did, I can't imagine knowing that it will likely result in the death penalty. I can't imagine turning my kids in. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. No, you know, one, because I don't agree with the death penalty, but more importantly, because I'm not going to subject, I mean, justice, there's a couple things here. One, just being a father and the capital punishment, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, justice will not be served if he in fact is put to death from a moral standpoint.
Well, it doesn't bring back Charlie Kirk. It doesn't give him back to his children or to his wife.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why, as Catholics, we look at the death penalty. It's not the perfect solution.
Yeah.
And that's why the church has been clearer in more recent times. We talked about this in another episode. Mm-hmm. That you know, in past times, it might have made sense as a way to protect society, but because of our ability to really take these people out of circulation in society and protect society, it's not restoring justice to kill them.
But I, on a human level,
right,
I'm thinking, I know it's wrong,
mm-hmm.
but I feel a sense of justice, particularly knowing that in Utah, one of the methods of capital punishment is the firing squad.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes. Oh. That this fellow, if in fact he is, you know, deemed to be the shooter,
right,
that he would be subjected to the same death that he, you know, he lived and died by the sword.
Right.
There's a sense of, you know, me feeling satisfied by that, even though I know it's wrong. But if it's my kid, I can't imagine.
Right.
I can't not imagine.
Hmm. Yeah. And I can't I'm not very good at empathy, Chris.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to put myself in your shoes.
What if it was your father?
If it was my father, but I, you know, as a man and as by training also, I have a very strong sense of justice. So if my father did something that was wrong,
it would result likely in the death penalty.
The possibility that it would go to the death penalty? We enter into the whole question of like whether the death penalty should be even available.
Yeah.
Okay. From a Catholic perspective, I think we have some issues with that. So I would, and a lot of people who go, they get the sentence of a death penalty. It's never carried mm-hmm. out. They ended up, you know, living their life out in prison. I was just talking with a gentleman yesterday who's on death row and down in Louisiana, and you know, he's been on death row for 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and they just found out that his cousin admitted to the murder that he was sentenced for.
Mm.
So he'll probably be exonerated in not too distant future. So I don't know. Chris, you're putting me on the spot here.
It's a tough one.
It is.
I can tell you, though, I can't imagine turning my kid in. Not when I know it's the death penalty. But if it was something.
If you separate it out, all right, let's look at it from this perspective. You're not the one sentencing your child to death, nor killing your child. You're just turning them over to the justice system for that to carry out its process.
Nonetheless, I can't imagine turning my own kid in for something that I think is going to be a
capital. Let me share with you a story. I forget the name of the saint, but there was a saint in the like the 1400s in Italy who was, it was a time of vendettas between different rival factions, and her husband was killed by this rival family, and her two sons started plotting to get revenge and kill the people who had carried out the murder of their father. And their mother, she started praying for the conversion of their hearts. She said, "Lord, please change their hearts. And if they won't convert and if they won't desist from their plans, please take their lives." She prayed for that. And both of them died before they could carry out their revenge. So she's a saint. Maybe we need to pray for that holiness of life to see things as God sees them.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. In a Wall Street Journal op-ed, the author quotes a British Catholic woman named Jo Gilbert, who says that in the mid-1980s, England, there were two questions that went around elementary schools. One was, do you like the Beatles? And the other was, do you believe in God? Both were tests that you knew that you had to say no to because otherwise you were seriously uncool. She says it was typical of an age when Britain was rapidly secularizing because the Beatles were your parents' music and Christianity was your parents' religion.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens, though, if secularization stops? So across Britain, evidence, according to this op-ed, tells of a modest but real Christian revival. Anglican clergy are regularly describing a steady trickle of new parishioners seeking to know about the faith, and some Catholic dioceses are noting a sharp increase in adults who are asking to be baptized. So this Miss Gilbert, she works at a Catholic parish, and one young convert said to her recently, being Catholic has become cool. So whereas older generations might be bored by their parents' Christianity, younger people might be looking at it as something fresh and exciting. So my question to you is, assuming this revival is in fact happening, does it matter that some folks are coming back to the faith because it's, quote, cool? Is the reason for coming back to the faith, other than, say, an authentic call to conversion, does it matter? Or just get them in the boat no matter how?
I would take St. Paul's approach. It's like, just that Christ be proclaimed. That's all that I care. So whatever the motives are that bring people back to the church, I think we want to deepen that. We want to make sure that it's authentic. But I think it's a beautiful thing. And it's not just in Britain. I was actually in London this past Sunday. I was going through the airport. And I was in France the whole week before. We were on a pilgrimage. And all across France, we were seeing these signs of revival too. That over 18,000 young adults who were baptized this past Easter in France. And the bishops are scratching their heads and thinking, like, we didn't do anything. There's something that's coming about. Maybe it's a cool factor. Maybe it's the dawn of AI and people are asking soul-searching questions and AI is just providing.
Maybe the church heritage. Needed to shrink to grow.
Maybe. I think there's also an element of young people are always a little bit rebellious. And if, like my sister-in-law, she's from a little town in France, Luny. She grew up as an atheist because her father literally abandoned the church, repudiated the church. And she always felt this desire to, you know, to the beauty, the goodness of the Catholic Church. And she converted and became Catholic. So this is happening across the board.
Yeah, it's not hard to believe that truth is attractive.
It is.
Yeah, and that's really my question. Does it matter how you get in the boat? Or
not really.
Yeah.
God has lots of ways to bring us into his truth and goodness.
So John Byrne Murdoch wrote for the Financial Times that conscientiousness, a quality he defines as quote, being dependable and disciplined, is linked, along with other traits, to professional success, longevity, durable relationships. He also notes that studies have indicated that those traits are more conducive to a good quality of life, more conducive than intelligence or socioeconomic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Contemporary culture is inundating society with comfort and instant gratification, and you know, contra to what he's saying conscientiousness is. So he highlights the rise of artificial intelligence, noting that once challenging school assignments can easily be traded for a quick answer.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So he also adds that younger generations are also demonstrating high levels of anxiety and reclusiveness. Interestingly, that he writes that long the most extroverted group in society, young adults are now the most introverted.
Interesting.
What are your thoughts? I know that you've The Anxious Generation is a book you quote often. So
yeah, by Jonathan Haidt. That's a fascinating insight into the connection between anxiety and depression in our society and the usage of social media, especially among young women. But there's no doubt that we have the younger generation has grown up with cell phones in their hands, and you watch people walking down the street, and a lot of times they're not even watching where they're going. I mean, half the people when you're walking down the street have AirPods in, and they're listening to music or they're listening to a podcast, and they're not engaging with the people around them. So I think these factors of more of isolation of people and of just living in their own little world makes them less dependable, less conscientious, less attuned to how their actions are affecting the people around
them. And less disciplined. So here's one interesting tidbit. Sure. So a couple of my kids are currently running cross country. My brother ran cross country in college for University of Texas. So right. I found it interesting when one of my sons was running cross country for a state champion team at St. Pius, the times were significantly slower than 40 years ago.
Really?
And I went to the coach and I was like, "What? How could that be? What's going on here?" And he had an immediate response. He said, smartphones.
Really?
That kids are not getting the recovery time they used to because they are up later on their smartphones.
Interesting.
I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
And so that goes to the discipline factor.
Really fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, it's significant too, the times.
That is really fascinating.
5Ks that used to be in the 1430s are now 16 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Maybe my high school record will stand for a couple more years then.
Yeah, I don't think any record you had is going to stand.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires. Navigating News with Faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.